Hello, and welcome to the Text and Us podcast. I'm your host, George Fricks, and I'm here with my co-host, L. Grover Fricks, to resume our discussion in Genesis chapter 34.
Yeah, we got 34 today. So if you are not familiar, this one's the story of Dina. So brief content warning for anyone for whom that might be troubling. Just to give this one a good old skip on ahead. Or if you have kids who you would also appreciate them not listening to this material, we'll hear from you next week. But otherwise, let's get into it, George. Scroll the better sheet, chapter 34.
All right.
Here we go. Dina, daughter of Leah, whom she had birthed to Yaakov, went out to see the daughters of the land. He saw her, Shechem, son of Hamor the Chivi, living, the prince of the land. He took her, he lay down with her and oppressed her. His soul clung in Dina, daughter of Yaakov. He loved the young person. He spoke upon the heart of the young person. Shechem said to Hamor his father, "Take for me this child as a woman." Yaakov shamad that he had desecrated Dina, his daughter. His sons were with his purchased things in the field. Yaakov made himself keep silent until they came. Hamor, father of Shechem, went to Yaakov to speak with him. The sons of Yaakov came from the field as they shamad it. The men suffered themselves and greatly burned with anger toward them, for a withering, wilting thing had been done in Yisrael. Lying down, the daughter of Yaakov, this should not have been done. Hamor spoke with them, saying, "Shechem, my son, his soul has adhered within the daughter of you all. Please give her to him to be a woman. Make a marriage treaty with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourselves. Settle with us in the land that will be before your faces. Sit and trade and take possessions in it." Shechem said to her father and to her brothers, "I would find chen in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I'll give. Make it great over me. A dowry and a gift I would give, whatever you say to me. Give to me the young person to be a woman." The sons of Yaakov answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, in deceit. They spoke that he had desecrated Dina, their sister. They said to them, "No, we are not able to do this word to give our sister to a man who is uncircumcised, for it would be a stripping, sharp degradation to us. But in this we consent to you all. If you will be as we are, every male circumcised, we will give our daughters to all, and your daughters we shall take to ourselves. We will settle with you. We will become one people. If you all do not shema us and be circumcised, we will take our daughter and walk." Their words were good in the eyes of Hamor and in the eyes of Shechem, son of Hamor. The young man did not delay to do the thing, for he delighted in the daughter of Yaakov. He was more glorious than all the house of his father. Hamor and Shechem, his son, came into the gate of their city. They spoke to the men of their city, saying, "These men are peaceful with us. They will settle in the land and trade. The land, look here, is wide for their presence. We will take their daughters for ourselves as women, and our daughters we will give to them. Only in this the men will consent to settle with us and to be one people. Every male will be circumcised as they are circumcised. Their purchased things and property and every silent animal, will they not be ours? If only we consent to them and they settle with us." All who went out of the gate of his city, shamad to Hamor and Shechem his son. Every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city. It was on the third day, when they were in pain, two of the sons of Yaakov, Shimon and Levi, brothers of Dina, each took a sword. They came upon the secure city. They slew every male. Hamor and Shechem his son they slew with the mouth of the sword. They took Dina from the house of Shechem. They went out. The sons of Yaakov came upon the pierced ones. They took as their prey the city that had desecrated their sister, the flocks and the cattle and the donkeys, and that which was in the city and that which was in the field. They took all their force and their toddlers and the women they took captive. They took as prey all that was in the household. Yaakov said to Shimon and Levi, "You have roiled me like water and caused me to stink among all those who sit in the land, in the Kanaani and in the Perizi. I have few men in number. If they gather themselves over me and strike me, I will be destroyed, I and my household." They said, "Will he make our sister a sex worker?" This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. All right. Difficult passage.
Mm-hmm. But there's good stuff in here. So how'd you split it up?
Yeah. So I split this into two sections. The first part is verses 1 through 19. And the second part, is verses 20 through 31.
Gotcha.
So only two parts. And yeah, so we'll get into part one. This opening paragraph, we have Dina, daughter of Leah, whom she had birthed to Yaakov, went out to see the daughters of the land.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting opening.
Yeah.
First off, we have it saying daughter of Leah, which, you know, maybe that's just because she is a daughter. You know, normally we see, we would expect to see daughter of Yaakov.
Right. I believe it's Rav Forman who has this really, really good teaching about this chapter. And he talks about how Shimon and Levi are upset. And indeed, all the other brothers are upset, not just because this is a horrible crime, but because they view the passivity, which runs in this family of patriarchs, but the passivity of Yaakov being because he is prizing the kids of Rachel over the kids of Leah.
Right.
And so this first introduction to Dina, or reminder of which of the wives she is a daughter of, according to Forman, is a suggestion, an interpretive suggestion that's telling us, reminding us she's not of the favored part of the family. Super possible.
Yeah, I like that. It's better than anything that I could find. Really, the Midrash just wanted to make connections between the character of Dina and the character of Leah and in like a negative light. You know, I didn't find it very compelling or positive or productive.
Or helpful.
Yeah, to go down that route. So I did not choose to pursue that.
Yeah. I know there's also a lot of teachings about, I don't know about a lot, but I remember when I've studied this passage before, there's lots of rabbinical criticism of her going out to see the daughters of the land.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, you're going to keep her chained in the basement because she's a woman, you know, a very victim blamey stuff out there. So we'll be avoiding all of that today.
Right.
So do not fear. Hopefully you're in good hands. Okay, so the text puts the emphasis on him, despite telling us the context of when this happened. The narrator puts all of the blame on Shechem.
Right. Yeah, he saw her, Shechem. How do you say that, Shechem?
Oh boy, this one's...
Shechem.
Shechem.
Shechem, son of Hamor.
There we go.
The Chivi.
Third time, you got it.
That's right. Yitzchak.
Just try to keep it going. Just
keep it rolling, yeah. Chivi, which means living. So these other two names we saw in the end of the previous chapter.
Right.
Already. And so we had the translations for them previously. Shechem was rise early, and Hamor was foaming donkey.
Right. So there's also an alternative thing that you could do with Shechem. So Shechem is also the word for shoulder.
Okay.
And shoulder and rise early are tied together because one of the reasons that you might rise early is if you need to pack to get ready to go on the road. And so you need to get up extra early in order to shoulder your pack.
Oh,
and
okay.
And tie up your animals with their various burdens. And so you could also go with shoulder. I am open to and curious to hear any particular interpretations that tie in either of those meanings to this story, but I'm not sure what they might be.
You know, it's, I'm not sure that I really can super clearly.
Unless he like rose up early in the morning because he's being a sneaky predator. I don't know.
Right.
That's all I got. Hunters probably get up early in the morning. Don't ask a vegetarian. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Now, what I had been doing before in the previous chapter, the end of the previous chapter, was trying to make a comparison between what Yaakov was doing and what had happened with Lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this chapter continues that narrative. Mm. And so I do want to look at some of that. So if we go with that and take these words of rise early, maybe not as exact as they are here, but more generally.
Okay.
The beginning of the Sodom and Amorah story begins with Avram sitting in his tent early in the morning. And he rises up to go meet the angels. And, you know, we kind of fast forward, but those angels eventually make it to Sodom and Amorah.
Right. And it's another story about sexual violence.
It is. That includes the destruction of people. And how many angels are there?
Well,
in Sodom and Amorah?
Two.
Two. And how many people do we have come to the city here? Two.
Or come out of the city.
Anyway. Well, so the brothers of...
Oh.
Yeah.
Shimon and Levi, sure.
Yes. So I do think that there are some connections here, and I'll highlight those as we go through.
Okay, great.
Because I think they're compelling. I think also you can't compare back to Lot without also comparing back to Noach. And so I think there are also some callbacks to the Noach story. In this passage that I will look at also, starting with the daughters of the land, is a callback potentially to right before the Noah story. We have the
Nephilim
with
and
the daughters.
That the daughters were good, not hot. Maintain that till my dying day.
And it results in this growing evil until we have the destruction that God brings.
Sure. Okay, so in this parallel, then, that would make Dina like one of the fallen ones?
No, one of the daughters of humanity.
But she went to go see the daughters of the land.
Oh, yeah, but she, yes, but that doesn't mean she, the opposite party here, it would be Shechem.
Okay. All
right. Right, would be in the Nephilim camp, in my interpretation.
Right. Well, we're talking about the violence, certainly. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, the only other time, I think I have this correct, that we see this went out term used is in Genesis 4 when Cain went out from his home after he murders his brother.
Murder party.
Yeah. And so it has this connection to wandering. And the rabbis make a connection with wandering. She went out to wander.
Right, as part of their victim-blaming scheme.
As part of their victim-blaming scheme, and I think that you could talk about her wandering without a victim-blaming scheme going on, right? I think that she has an interesting place in Yaakov's household in that, again, right? We talked about the fact that she's a daughter of Leah. And there's already some things going on between Leah and Rachel that Yaakov should be doing better with in the family.
Right.
And the fact that she's a daughter, I think, would also potentially make that more so the case, right? Because she should be doing other things.
Well, to throw in a modern midrash, the... have you heard of the show or the book, The Red Tent?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes, I have.
In The Red Tent, Dina is depicted as a midwife, or I think if I recall, the assistant to midwife.
Okay.
And so she's going out in the daughters of land. They're making money. They're making connections. They're making allyships. They're building, you know, sisterhood amongst the peoples of the land. Gaining good favor in their eyes. And so that's why it's specifically, in my opinion, the narrator is showing that she's being kosher, right? I mean, kosher generally, not kosher as in its actual meaning, that she's walking uprightly here. She's going, and it doesn't say that she's wandering in the wilderness, although I'm fine with the parallel that you're drawing to Cain there, but she's going specifically not to like go out amongst the people and be cosmopolitan, which is kind of the way that the rabbis tend to lean, but specifically to see the daughters of the land. So she's not out like, you know, flipping her hair or whatever.
Yes.
She's out there specifically to see the other women. And so the red tent, or Anita Diamond, I believe is her last name, suggests that it's because she's a midwife, which I find quite possible. She could have been selling with them, you know, doing merchant work, all sorts of things, but she's doing the right thing here. And again, I do appreciate all those parallelisms, walking through this text, pointing out a few things though along the way about the emphasis that the biblical narrator makes about the who with whom the fault lies,
right?
And other really interesting comments. So certainly puts Shechem as the perpetrator here, which he is, oppressing her. You'll notice after that, he refers to her, and Chamora's father refers to her never by name. She's only the young person, not even a young woman. And then when it's talking about the brothers and Yaakov, it's back to Yaakov Shamad that he had desecrated Dina. So back to her actual name, and the text reminds us his daughter. So there's this emphasis between the personal, seeing her as a human being, and this conversation between the men led by Chamor and Shechem that sees her as very like, oh, this is going to be an alliance and we're going to get all their stuff, right? We see this later. We get to share in this treaty if we do this exchange, so everybody should do it, right?
Yeah.
That's not seeing her as a person.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that the text points that out, and such a great line, should be on all of her brochures or tattoos or whenever we talk about sexual violence inside and outside the church. Specifically, the narrator points out, so life-giving, this should not have been done.
Right. Right.
Period.
Yeah.
So can bring up all of those living and dead rabbis, and you know, I'm sure the Christian community hasn't done a great job either, the male Christian community preaching on this. So not just flagellating the rabbis here, but this should not have been done, period. Does not say Dina should not have blah, blah, blah. This should not have happened.
Right. And the rabbis take that and they apply that as like, this is not just a thing that would have been said amongst God's people, but across the earth, and how, after the flood, right, you know, through Noah and his generations after him, that was the new norm, right? As opposed to pre-flood, right, we had the Nephilim taking women.
Right.
And they draw that distinction. And here we see that come up again, which I think another reason why it's compelling to draw that connection back.
Right.
That it's saying this is not something that's done anymore.
Right. It's not something that should happen.
Right.
Also, the use of the word, you know, there's lots of different ways that the English can take the word about what happened there. I liked desecrated because it implies, which is also in the actual word, it implies that something that is holy, that is sacred, that is good, has been treated not like sacra, right?
Right.
Latin there. So it's been treated as if it is not. And it's not necessarily, you know, now she's defiled or something horrible. But something was done to her that did not honor the sacredness of who she was.
Right.
And so I also really appreciate that, that the text frames it that way, because there's so many other horrible ways. I'm not saying that Tanakh is always, you know, in line with a certain brand of politics or anything, but I do so appreciate when the Spirit has kept for us this language that still does affirm you know, the dignity of women and the fact that sexual violence shouldn't happen to anyone, including women, right?
Yeah.
So those that were choice and that line, this should not have been done, is life-giving to me as a reader of the text, as a follower of God. So
yeah. So yeah, and again, also, we can trace this blame back, I think, to Yaakov and his passivity, mm-hmm. and also even again, I'm going to push that Lot narrative, mm-hmm. his willingness to come and settle near this city to begin with, and we see it start with him separating from Esav, in what should have been a reunion,
right?
And just like Avraham and Lot separate, and Lot ends up going down and settling in this city,
right.
We see Yaakov and Esav separating.
Right.
And
despite Esav trying.
Right. And it's Yaakov who goes and settle in this city. We almost see this reversal of the stories.
Right.
Perspectives between the patriarchs.
Who's the good guy and the bad guy.
And who's the good guy. And we always, always, always paint Esav as the bad guy. We've talked about that a lot with the Midrash and all that. But
right.
I think there is a narrative here that we should recognize of Esav trying to make peace with Yaakov, and Yaakov being the one to say, no, I'm going to go over here instead.
Right. Which last week, I believe it was, you tried to bring up, and I said, wait till we get there, about where Dina was in that story, because in that story, it lists all the brothers being there.
Right.
And it says, counts their number, and it doesn't say where she is. So what does that Midrash say?
Yes. So there is a Midrash about that, and it says that Yaakov put Dina in a trunk and hid her because he did not want Esav to marry her.
Right.
And interesting also callbacks, I think, to both, I think
it's Avraham put Sarah in a trunk so nobody will see. And then he goes
right.
to go through customs and they're like, what's in there?
Yes.
And he says, not telling. And they say, well, we'll tax you for pearls then. And
right.
he says, okay.
Yes. And they're like, and it must be more valuable.
Must
yes.
be more valuable. And then they open it and they find her. So apparently sticking women in trunks is a common practice, at least in the time that those Midrashim were written. But the point is, that, you know, it's weird for us because we have different practices around who marries whom and what's okay
right.
there. But that to marry Dina to Esav would have been to unite these two brothers in a formal political way. Because marrying often we'll see again later in this text once we actually get to walking through it again.
Right.
It's a marriage treaty. It's something that binds you to that person. And so, you know, Yaakov wanting to keep Dina from Esav isn't so much a like, I don't think he'll be good for you. I don't think your personalities will get along well. It's a, I do not want my family to be tied to this family.
Right.
Move. And so there's an element here, obviously, again, in my opinion, all of the blame here goes on Shechem. But if you were also going to spread it around, she would be safe with Esav
right.
if he hadn't done that.
Well, and if he had stayed with Esav, definitely.
Right.
Right? And so, and the if you've listened to Bema and heard Marty teach about the Lot and Avraham story of them separating, one of the things that Marty points out is the rabbinical structure of talking about how Lot is the assimilator, right? He assimilates into the culture rather than changing the culture like Avraham does.
Right, because we find him in a gate.
Right. And I think that this connection is here to show us this glimpse of Yaakov being tempted to assimilate.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's definitely what's happening in this narrative, right? The sons of this town are trying to get Yaakov and his sons to assimilate into their people.
Right, and ally with them. And Yaakov is mad about that specifically.
Right.
At the end, you've made me stink.
Yeah, which...
pretty sure Shechem made everything stink. Thank
yeah.
you very much.
And there's fear there, right? The fear that people are going to come and kill him.
Right.
And, you know, what would happen there is they would carry off his household, ironically.
Right. Maybe you should have been guarding them better from the set off.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's get verse by verse. So jumping down to Yaakov heard what had happened, which is interesting. I'm kind of curious about how that went down. While his sons were with his ding, 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 purchase things.
Yes.
We always have a negative cast on those purchase things. Why isn't the family together? Because of the
possessions
purchase
are always a problem.
And Yaakov made himself keep silent until they came. I thought that was interesting. That comes out in the grammar in the Hebrew. He caused himself to be. He wasn't just silent. He really put the lid on it, which is a slight positive that he's upset, because we don't necessarily see that in the rest of the text. But that's a little hint that he's not just like, oh, I'll have to let everyone know. So Chamor comes out to talk to Yaakov.
Right. And says, give me your daughter.
And then the sons came in as soon as they hear it, as soon as they shout at it, they attend to it. And it says that they suffered themselves, which again is, it's a reflexive verb. So it means that they, not only the text paints them as doing it to themselves partially, which is interesting. It's in Hitpael Binyan for my students out there. So it's not just they were caused to suffer because they heard, but as they're amongst themselves talking and burning with anger, their suffering is building upon itself. And they burn with anger toward them, for a withering, wilting thing had been done in Yisrael. Again, I like that that frames that there was goodness and life and vivacity and greenness.
Yeah.
And instead, something has been done which should not have been done that wilts that thing.
Right. Yes. And I like that connection to greenness, you know. And the imagery behind that, the NIV and ESV say outrageous, which, you know, communicates it kind of.
Yeah.
But it doesn't quite get the element of, I think, nature that you have with the withering wilted.
Right. Well, I think the withering and wilting puts the spotlight on Dina, because she's the plant, she's the growing thing that's been trampled, and an outrageous thing, right? Yes, very good flood narrative there. The outrageous thing you can totally take in a patriarchal culture and be like, he did this without asking Yaakov first, right?
Right.
What an outrage. They didn't follow the standards of bartering women around. You know, this is surprising and terrible. So although outrageous communicates some of that, I prefer what the text actually says.
Right. So lying down the daughter of Yaakov, this should not have been done. Chamor spoke with them, saying, Shechem, my son, his soul has adhered with the daughter of you all. Please give her to him to be a woman. And make a marriage treaty with us. Which is interesting. I think this is the first time we see this marriage treaty
language.
Give your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourselves. Settle with us in the land. So again, that assimilation piece.
Right.
That will be before your faces. Sit and trade and take possessions in it.
Right. So the marriage treaty, which is from this word chatan, reminds us strongly that this is a community conversation. This is not an individualist culture. This is not about Dina's well-being, which makes it more valiant that Shimon and Levi at the end say something about her dignity, right? They don't care as much about this treaty and the land and all this stuff. You could argue about that because they certainly loot the place. But this isn't about, again, I think the red tent makes it look like Dina was into Shechem, which is fine as an alternative reading. partially perhaps because it says that he spoke over her heart. But it's also specifically says that he was bonded to, he clung to Dina. He, again, Shechem says his soul has adhered within her. So, you know, it doesn't put this emphasis on her being a willing participant at all, and immediately shifts to this communal, hey, let's make the best of this and have a marriage alliance, whatever you want.
Right. Make it great over me, a dowry and a gift
I would give. Whatever you say.
Yeah. And the wild thing here is that it appears that Yaakov just goes ahead and gives her to him. And while it doesn't, I think, explicitly say that in the text, when we see her next,
she's in the city.
It's Shimon and Levi taking her out of the city.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know that he says okay, because it says in the next line, the sons of Yaakov answered Shechem and Hamor in deceit. So I think he doesn't say anything, kind of like we saw with Lot didn't allow his dad to do the conversation around Rivka, right? He kind of jumped in there and was like, "Ooh, sparkly things, how can I help?" Same situation here. I'm guessing that he had desecrated Dina, their sister, must mean that they spoke amongst themselves or to one another.
Right.
Because I cannot imagine
them saying that.
I mean, maybe, because they still say no, not unless you get circumcised. Which I love that the narrator doesn't leave us in suspense. They're not like afterwards, the narrator doesn't say, but this was a lie. They tell us right at the top, they answered in deceit.
Right. Right. We know right now
right,
that things are, something is up.
Right. Which, I mean, the text doesn't always condemn this kind of moral ambiguity of tricking people, right? Even Jesus says that he would have us be wily like snakes, right? And also innocent as doves, of course. But and so we see that here, potentially. I mean, I'm not going to be pro, spoiler alert, I'm not going to be pro kidnapping the women and the toddlers. But right. I do appreciate the brothers here doing something when Yaakov does not appear to be acting as patriarch, because this should be him answering them. And it should be him fighting for the honor and the dignity and the well-being of his daughter, and he's not. And so, as Foreman says, maybe it's because she was the daughter of Leah. Maybe it's because she's a daughter in general. Who knows? But the boys cook up this plan.
They do. And it's interesting, you know, and it is around, no pun intended, circumcision, which is an interesting move. I mean, obviously it makes sense when you look at the big picture, in that it weakened the men so that they could be slain easily. But the fact that these brothers all turn to, okay, yes, we'll do this, but you have to take upon yourself the sign of the covenant that we have made.
Right.
First is an interesting move.
Yeah. I think it says something about their knowledge of what defines them as a family, that plan would spring to mind.
Right.
I mean, it's always possible that they didn't, and they just sat there thinking about what could we do to make them severely impeded in their ability to fight. But yeah, apparently for them, their group identity is bound by this sign of the covenant. So good job, boys.
Right. He says, if you do not shema us and be circumcised, we will take our daughter and walk. And here we come to kind of the center of this story. I say center because I think there's a chiasm here.
Okay.
We'll get to it, but I believe that this is the center of the chiasm.
Okay.
Their words were good in the eyes of Hamor and the eyes of Shechem, son of Hamor. The young man did not delay to do the thing, for he delighted in the daughter of Yaakov. He was more glorious than all the house of his father.
which is a super interesting line to me. You can also translate that he was more heavy than all the house of his father. So mm-hmm. like telling us he's a big deal, or, you know, there's just different ways you could go with that and say, what does the text want us to know about Shechem?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why that? Also, P.S., putting more weight on my theory and Foreman's theory that I'm just totally piggybacking on. He said that the brothers say, we will take our daughter, right? They're clearly acting in the space of Yaakov.
Right.
Otherwise, they would say our sister.
Our sister.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, now continue. Why do you think this is center of the chiasm other than counting?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you count, you're going to end up a little bit off. But we have here the center. Previous to that, we have this conversation around you need to get circumcised.
Right.
After this, what we see is them going back and saying, look, we get all this stuff. We just have to get circumcised.
Right.
And there's a reversal in the phrasing that happens here. In the first half, it says, we will give our daughters to you all, and your daughters we will take to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the second half, when they go back and report, they say, we will take their daughters for ourselves as women, and our daughters we will give to them.
Uh-huh.
And so reversing of the deal there a little bit, right? Every male would be circumcised as they are circumcised is what we see them saying is the condition in verse 15.
It sets in, which I presume that's what makes the chiasm not quite line up. Ding, 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 a little highlighted thing there. Their purchased things and property and every silent animal, will they not be ours? So showing the consumerism, materialism, the greed of this people.
Right.
And that being their real motivation. And the fact that it sticks out of the chiasm is, intentionally highlighted by
right.
the author then.
Right. And it closes out, I won't keep going point by point, but it closes out with them took Dina from the house of Shechem. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the story, we see Shechem taking Dina.
Right. Okay. Well, then if you look at that center section, their words were good in the eyes of Chamor. The young man did not delay to do the thing because he delighted in her. He was more glorious than all the house of his father. If you look at that section and say, well, then why is this the middle? Why is this the center of gravity around which everything swings? Their words were good, therefore, because he was more glorious than everybody else. The men are following, which leaves the very center. He delighted in the daughter of Yaakov,
right.
which feels to me like a big condemnation on Yaakov, right? Maybe I'm reading into it here with my biases and my baggage, but maybe if Yaakov had delighted in his daughter, this would not have happened, right?
Right.
He, this random bro, prince of the city, is the one who's delighting in her. And, you know, making heaven and earth move in order to try to secure her, something that Yaakov should have done.
Right. Yes.
Indeed, as patriarch, is his duty to have done, again, with Esav, which we saw him abdicate out of fear.
Right. And it says, their words were good in the eyes of Chamor, which is what we see Lot say to the men outside of his door when he offers up his daughters.
Oh.
He says, do to them as is good in your eyes.
Oh.
Right.
Mm.
And then there's destruction.
Right.
Which is what we see here.
Sure do.
But also, right, that also goes back to the Noach story of people doing what is good in their own eyes.
Right.
Right. And the destruction of the earth and delighting in their evil.
Right.
Big and seeking glory. Energy. Right. Mm-hmm. Over. So.
What is good. Bummer. I want to point out on the third day when they were in pain. Last time we saw third day was when, George? Do you remember?
Ooh, last time we saw third day.
It was.
Oh, man. It doesn't happen very often.
It was them running off. Last time was our
Yaakov,
first mention.
Yeah, running from Levon.
And I made the good old Jesus connection because I was saying, Yaakov at that point said the reason that he was taking off was because he was building new household. And so Jesus rising from the dead on the third day, he's building the household of God, the family of God, right? And here again, it was on the third day when they were in pain that they took a sword and slew every male. So they're still working on their new household and cutting down what's in the way. So, you know, thematically works. Not as thankfully, it's not the way that Jesus came to establish his household, but
right.
They came upon the secure city and slew every male by the mouth of the sword.
Yeah. There was some variance in the other translations on the secure city portion. The NIV says the unsuspecting city, which okay. I feel like is the opposite. Like they completely missed the beat there. Unsuspecting city doesn't really communicate secure. Maybe if you go with they were unsuspecting because they felt secure, you could go there. ESV says while it felt secure. So kind of going on that thought. The KJV just skips that entirely and says they came upon the city boldly.
Okay. So very different, different takes.
Yeah. Around that word, the secure city.
So here's why. The word is betach, which is the word that we get trust from.
Okay.
Well, amun. Anyway, there's different words. Secure, grounded, trusting, settled, are all whenever you say, of course, if you were going to say in modern Hebrew, like, do you want to go get some dinner? I'd say, betach, of course, sure, certainly.
Okay.
And so
it is assured.
Yes. Yeah, right. One of like the top three words that I use all the time in Hebrew and sometimes while I'm speaking English. But anyway, and so the question is, who's betach? Is it the city is betach or is it the men who are betach? Are the men entering boldly? Are Shimon and Levi entering in betach?
Secure in their plan?
Right. Or is it that the city is secure? I think it's the city, partially from grammar and everything, but partially because I think the text is trying to emphasize the fact that the city felt okay. Ha'ir. Betach. It's a little bit weird because it should have a hey in front of it. It should have the definite article. So it's a little bit murky. And I think that's why you get different different perspectives on what's happening there.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
They kill all the men and they snatch Dina from the house of Shechem. I think that there's some allusions going on here. It says the sons of Yaakov came upon the pierced ones.
I think so too.
And they took as their prey the city that had desecrated their sister.
Yep.
I see both of that mirrored. Also, I think
chiastically.
Well, chiastically, but you know, narratively, pointing out some what we would refer to as dean justice, some retributive justice.
Right.
Up at the top, by the way. I love that they say, and I love that nobody apparently blinks at it. The boys say to Hamor and Shechem, they say, it would be a stripping, sharp degradation to us if you were to give our sister to a man who's not circumcised.
Uh-huh.
Like, can you just imagine the tone that probably Reuben is saying that with?
Uh-huh.
You know, like, I can't think of a better, more quintessentially perfect words to use than those. And so I think they know what they're doing in this story.
Right. Right.
But then they also take the flocks and the cattle and the donkeys, which, hey, I guess they would have died.
Right.
Since all the men are dead.
Yeah. Which going back to the top of the story, they're coming in from the possessions back into the household. And here at the bottom of the story, they're taking possessions.
Gotcha.
To return to the household.
So, I mean, and from that perspective, taking the women and the toddlers, that still sucks. But I can imagine that's a classic move that you do when you've killed all the men.
Yeah, you know? And you know, I think that's why we see that appear previously in the text, in the text as a fear from the patriarchs specifically. We're going to go into this town, they're going to see all of you, they're going to kill me, and they're going to take you away.
Right, but I mean...
And that's just something that could happen plausibly.
Right. No, I definitely agree. What I'm trying to say is, even though it feels like I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt too much, that there's a fear that they would die if they left them there without any men, which feels a little bit cynical, like women don't know how to farm or trade and would just like, oh no, lie around until they, you know, starved and died. That seems unlikely, but that's one of the reasons to take the animals, right? If everybody's dead, well, somebody's got to take care of them, so...
Yeah, I definitely see that as a plundering thing. And I wonder if that's why when the Israelites come back into the land, God tells them not to do that.
Yes, yes.
Right.
I agree. It's super sus. I mean, they say they took as prey all that was in the household. So it's not like they took to provide for all that was in the household.
Yeah.
Just pointing out, even though it's sketchy, that there could be a tiny bit of goodwill wrapped in there. Of
right.
Like, hey, we'll provide for you.
Okay. I'll take it loosely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Yaakov finally speaks.
Yeah.
He's waited this whole time and finally he speaks. He says, "You have roiled me like water and caused me to stink among all those who sit in the land."
Boo hoo. Get over it, Yaakov.
Yeah. In the Kana'ani and in the
Prizi,
not Italian. Prizi.
Prizi.
It's the Prizi.
Okay. Amore.
In the Prizi, which, again, connections to Lot. The other time we see the Kana'ani and the Prizi. The Prizi.
There we go.
In Genesis 13, there was grappling between Avram's shepherds of purchased things and Lot's shepherds of purchased things. Mm. The Kana'ani and the Prizi were settling in the land.
There you go.
Back to here, verse 30, "I have few men in number, so fearing for his safety. If they gather themselves over me and strike me, I will be destroyed." Which isn't that exactly what happens to Lot? A bunch of people get together, take the city, and run off.
What? Lot... Stuff aside, though, I agree, you're right. If they gather themselves over me.
Yes, very singular.
And strike me.
Yes.
I will be destroyed. I and my household.
Right. Very much a worldview of scarcity.
Yeah. Also very classic, you know, the person with privilege in the room being
right.
Like, well, if this happens, because that shouldn't have happened doesn't mean that this should happen, because that makes me feel victimized and uncomfortable. Okay,
right.
Well, you're not the person who's a victim of sexual violence, so how about you sit down for a minute
right.
If you're not going to participate in restorative
work. Well, and I think that you see that in their response in verse 31. They said, "We will make our sister." Again,
will
not...
he make? Will
yeah.
he make our
will
sister?
Will he make ours, but not his daughter, our
right.
sister...
Right.
A sex worker.
So they're pointing out, hey, this is about the dignity of Dina. Stop it.
Right.
Also, I think it's fascinating. It's he. So they could be talking amongst themselves about Yaakov. Like, if you don't do anything, if you say this is fine and you allow her honor to be taken away, you have done this. Or you could say that they're saying that about Shechem. But... either way, you know, God doesn't say anything this whole time. God doesn't show up and tell Shimon and Levi, hey, actually, no. No, thank you. He's quiet. And the next thing he says, we'll see in chapter 35, he speaks to Yaakov and keeps him moving to the place he was supposed to be going the whole time.
Right.
But that's for next week. Yeah, I just want to weight it a little bit the other way, because I've always heard Shimon and Levi be castigated for overreacting and violence. And so it's like, hey, nothing in this story is the way it should be, but I deeply, this is probably my Enneagram 8 coming out, but I can deeply appreciate someone saying this wasn't okay and I'm going to do something about it. No one's going to champion the marginalized and the victims.
Right.
I will.
Well, to back up your theory too... when Lot is taken captive, who goes and rescues him?
Right, Avram.
Avram. And he takes all the women and the livestock and the possessions and brings them back.
Right. Right, which, I mean, if Yaakov had not been walking in the steps of his forefathers in a negative way here through his passivity, and he had been team brothers,
right,
and said, hey, this isn't okay, let's make a plan, and then Shimon and Levi were like, how about we go kill all of them?
That would have right been, just Yaakov unexpectedly have, there's a small town over there, let's take it,
right. Yaakov could have had a part in that dialogue and said, well, I hear where you're coming from, but instead let's do this to rescue Dina and get out of here, right?
Yeah.
But because he abdicated by being so worried about himself and his own privilege and his reputation and how everybody would perceive him, right? Because that's what we see him saying at the end. He abdicates his responsibility, and therefore he's abdicated his seat at the table and his ability to come up with good solutions together. So you can't abdicate all responsibility, not do anything about patterns of violence through the church, I mean, in the story this whole time, and then get mad about the way that the situation is being handled. If you
subtle
wanted your seat at the table, you should have been sitting there the whole time. And I think on that is how we can, we'll dip out.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it.
All right.
I feel better.
Closing the book.
All right. If you want to get a hold of me for, you know, the usual reasons, which are wonderful. I get wonderful reader questions all the time.
We do. They're fantastic.
They
I
are.
Greatly appreciate them.
Yes, they're y'all are awesome out there. So if you want to send me one of those wonderful questions, you can find me at elkriverfricks@gmail.com.
This has been the Text and Us podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you will join us again next week for Genesis chapter 35.